When you hear the words haunted theater, your thoughts probably flicker to Shakespearean superstition, the Scottish play, or the moment Hamlet sees his dead father's apparition. Or maybe you think of Phantom of the Opera, or Abraham Lincoln slumped in his chair at Ford Theater. See, we're no stranger to the idea of specters on the stage. And it makes sense, after all. Aren't theaters places where anything becomes possible? Where fantastical, imaginary worlds spring to life right before an audience's eyes? Where the doors between worlds grow thin? But one thing that probably doesn't leap to mind when you envision a haunted theater is Australia. That's right, the old Down Under. Yet it turns out Australia boasts more haunted theaters than nearly anywhere else on Earth. Seriously, it's such a phenomenon that our researchers found multiple articles consolidating lists of Australian theater ghosts. Take, for example, the Metro Cinema in Melbourne, which is said to have a ghost projectionist, or Classic Cinemas in Elsternwick, which suffered enough poltergeist activity in the late 1990s that the owner brought in two clairvoyants to figure out what was going on. The answer, according to one of them, was that, and I quote, "It was caused by a small man from the 1930s who loved to play pranks," which is, well, adorable, right? They're not all quite so benign, though. A Melbourne spot called Cinema Nova experienced a more sinister haunting. During a period of construction, a night manager named Harry was exploring the building site by flashlight at 2 a.m. when he saw a person hanging from the roof by their neck. And like a horror movie, right in that moment, his flashlight snuffed out. Harry slapped the light, begging it to turn back on. And when it did, he shined it again toward the rafters. But the figure was gone. Now, the trouble isn't in just movie theaters, but live theaters too. Like the old Adelaide's Tivoli Theater, now known as Her Majesty's. There, a fly engineer, killed on the theater's opening night in 1912, has dutifully appeared on opening nights ever since. Then there's the Theatre Royal Hobart, haunted by a ghost named Fred. Fred was allegedly killed in a brawl in the theater's basement, where cockfights and gambling were known to take place. Was there a real Fred? Well, not according to any historical record. But that hasn't kept people from hearing his footsteps, as well as feeling pokes, prods, and even verbal warnings to leave. But hey, if you're starting to think that this guy Fred sounds like a bad time, let's give him credit where credit's due. In 1984, the theater caught fire, and without prompting, the fire curtain fell across the stage, containing the flames and saving the building. The Theatre Royal Hobart's protector is believed to have been, that's right, Fred. See, even ghosts can be multifaceted. But of all the Australian theater ghosts, there's one who just may have the rest beat, also named Fred. That is Frederick Frederiki. And this man was all too real. Anatoly Frederick Demidoff Baker was born in 1850 in Florence, Italy, to a military family. Although he trained for diplomatic service, he had a secret passion, and in the end, it was too great to ignore. So Frederick gathered his nerves, cast aside his old name in favor of the more theatrical-sounding Frederick Federici, and became an opera singer. And friends, he was good, too. He toured all over the world, performing in Gilbert and Sullivan shows. His roles spanned everything from the Pirate King from the Pirates of Penzance to Captain Corcoran in HMS Pinafore and more. But it was his role in Charles Gounod's opera Faust that would cement Federici's name in history. In 1887, Frederick traveled to Australia to perform in a series of operas. He had toured the country, culminating in perhaps the greatest role of his career, the demon Mephistopheles in Faust at Melbourne's Princess Theatre. Now, the Princess Theatre was an opulent 1,452-seat playhouse, and on opening night, the seats were packed. All the attention and rapture of an enchanted audience was glued on Federici, who was terrifying and awe-inspiring in a scarlet cloak. The show went by flawlessly, an actor's dream of an opening night. Each line delivered smooth as silk, each step in place. And finally, the last scene had arrived. The play ends with Mephistopheles dragging Dr. Faustus down into hell, which, through clever stagecraft, was to be achieved by Federici and the other actor sinking below the stage via a trapdoor. The two actors stood over the precipice. Smoke and false fire billowed around them, and Federici uttered his final lines. "It might be." They would be the last lines the great Federici would ever recite, because just then, as they lowered through the trapdoor, something went very wrong. He staggered, reached out to clutch the stage, now shoulder level as he sank, and then he collapsed through the trapdoor. The audience was none the wiser, applauding wildly. Even the actors were unaware, coming out to take their bows. Meanwhile, Frederick was carried to the green room, where a doctor tried in vain to revive him. The singer had died of a heart attack. He was only 37 years old. It wasn't until the following Monday's newspaper announced Federici's death that the audience realized that anything had gone amiss. The Illustrated Australian News lamented that, and I quote, "Nothing more weird and melancholy than this unlooked-for and highly sensational occurrence has been recorded in connection with the stage. The crimson hood, the pointed shoes and cap lying near him on the floor could only seem a grim and ghastly mockery." Audience members and cast alike were aghast. After all, they'd witnessed a man's death and hadn't even known it. But beyond that, if Frederick Federici was dead, then how did they all see him take his bow, right along with all the other actors that night? To this day, the opera singer is said to appear in the audience at night, wearing fine evening wear and sitting in the middle of the second or third row of the dress circle. In fact, this occurs so often that for years, the theater even saved a seat for him on every opening night. Sometimes critics catch him watching them skeptically. Ever the perfectionist, he's been seen frowning disapprovingly if the show is going poorly or the actors aren't up to snuff. But in general, seeing Federici has long been a sign of good luck, as if he were wishing his fellow thespians well. While some may say that he remains only in the audience, others claim differently. And perhaps if you visit the Princess Theater, you might see it too. Passionate as ever, Frederick Federici stands center stage. He is illuminated by moonlight, and it seems to pass right through him. And then, he raises his arms toward the crowd. It seems even in death, the show must go on. This episode of Lore Bites was produced by me, Aaron Mankey, with writing and research by Jenna Rose Nethercott and music by Chad Lawson. Lore Bites are a perk offered only to our Patreon and Apple Podcast paid subscribers, as a thank you for such generous support. Look for new episodes each Wednesday morning. Be sure to follow the show on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Just search for Lore Podcast, all one word, and then click the follow button. And when you do, say hi. I like it when people say hi. And as always, thanks for listening.